Hi, I'm Jeff Davis. I'm in the studio today with my co-host, Laura Hope Gill.
Hello, Laura. Jeff. Hi, good to see you.
Good to see you. Yes, another beautiful Sunday afternoon here between the Blue Ridge and the Smokies.
Isn't it? I've been refilling the kiddie pool and gardening in my garden. It's been a wonderful day.
Yeah, great June activities there. Yeah, kiddie pools.
Something not to be forgotten in adulthood, I think.
That's right. That's right.
The name is misleading.
Not for kiddies only.
Absolutely.
Right, right. Well, today we have a real treat. Robert Bly, who's pretty well known, I guess, in the world of poets and poetry, came to UNCA in April on the 25th and read at at the Humanities Lecture Hall.
Yes, and sponsored by the Prama Institute.
The Prama Institute, as well as UNCA. And he graciously allowed us to record the reading. So we're going to have some excerpts from that. And what we're going to hear is initially his reading of his own translations of Rilke. He also read translations of a number of other folks that we won't have a chance to hear today, like Kabir. Who else? Mirabai, Machado.
Did he read Rumi?
No Rumi, I don't think. Some Jimenez, Olaf Hauge, the Norwegian poet.
Of course.
That was a hoot.
I hadn't heard of him before that evening.
No, I had not either. And he has a unique style because he'll read a poem through stopping along the way to explicate or talk about certain lines or make, you know, observations of various
sorts. Or he just falls in love with a line. He'll be like, I'm going to read that again because I like it so much.
Yeah. Right. So you'll hear some repetitions as you go through here, but each one is more clarifying. And let's hear a little bit of Robert Bly. Let's just jump in.
Maybe I'll do a Rilke poem, Rainer Maria Rilke poem. How many of you in this room have read one poem at least of Rainer Maria Rilke? Pretty good. The rest of you better get to a library. So, Rainer Maria Rilke. I'll read you my little introduction. Rilke has, for hundreds of readers, been their first introduction to poetry that goes steeply and unapologetically up into the spirit. One could say that when a young man or woman encounters Rilke, he will slip his hand under the elbow and guide the person onto some small house that stands nearby, perhaps a hut where the railway switchman lives. Once inside, the young person notices that the ceiling is higher than one would have thought. In fact, the hut is a cathedral with immensely high vaults like Chartres, with deep shadows. Meanwhile, Rilke pretends that nothing unusual has happened. So he was a divine poet, born in 1875 in Prague. And he was the first poet that I read in the Western tradition who later had something of that which I found in the Hindus. So sometimes a man stands up during supper and walks outdoors and keeps on walking because of a house that stands somewhere in the east. And his children say blessings on him as if he had died. And another man who remains inside his own house dies there inside the dishes and the glasses, so that his children have to go far out into the world toward that same church which he forgot. See how that fits together? Incredible. And I was having a little writing house built up in northern Minnesota years and years ago, and I came there one day, and there's a young man up there pounding stuff on the ceiling. And I said, how did you get here anyway? Where are you from? Oregon. Why are you here? And he said, because my father put clothes into the washing machine every night. Whoa. And he didn't mean it was bad to put clothes into the washing machine. He meant that that's all his father ever did. You hear me? And those of you who are parents, you know, if you don't want your kids to end up in Guam, do something like read a book, you know. Sometimes a man stands up during supper and walks outdoors and keeps on walking because of a church that stands somewhere in the east. Right? That's the proper behavior. And his children say blessings on him, as if he had died. I was very surprised at that line. But somehow it's your parents who are able to open the spiritual world for you if they do something themselves. And if they don't, then you'll get to be 55 and you're still watching TV. Which in almost the whole country does. So there must be some problem. Sometimes a man stands up during supper and walks outdoors and keeps on walking because of a church that stands somewhere in the east. East is always the word that's used, east. And his children say blessings on him as if he had died. And another man who remains inside his own house dies there, inside the dishes and in the glasses, so that his children have to go far out into the world toward that same church which he forgot. Can you see, can you feel Wilke's incredible intelligence? I find you in all these things of the world that I love calmly like a brother. He's talking now like Kabir and Mirabai. I find you in all these things of the world that I love calmly like a brother. In things no one cares for, you brood like a seed. And into powerful things you give an immense power. Strength plays such a marvelous game. It moves through the things of the world like a serpent, groping out in roots, tapering in trunks, and in the treetops like a rising from the dead. Good for the tops of trees, isn't that good? And in the treetops like a rising from the dead. Well, maybe one or two more. Are you ready for a little longer one? Are you doing okay? I am too alone in this world, and not alone enough to make every minute holy. That's good. And I remember, as you know, when you're 20 years old and 22, you're somewhere and you say, I'm too alone in this world. And then you need a teacher to say, hell, you're not even alone enough. That's your problem. I am too alone in the world and not alone enough to make every minute holy. I am too tiny in this world and not tiny enough just to lie before you like a thing. Rilke always used the word dinga. That's a thing. It's an object that lies on the ground and lies there. And he said that. I want my own will, and I want simply to be with my will as it goes towards action. And in the silence, sometimes hardly moving times when something is coming near, I want to be with those who know secret things, or else alone. I want to be with those who know secret things, or else alone. I want to be a mirror for your whole body, and I never want to be blind or to be too old to hold up your heavy and swaying picture. I want to unfold. I don't want to stay folded anywhere. Boy, that's fantastic. Especially if you're writing poetry and you get to be about 25 or 30 years old, and you look at your poems and they're all folded, you know what I mean? You're in there, but you're folded. Even your own mother wouldn't recognize you. I want to unfold. I don't want to stay folded anywhere, because where I am folded, there I am alive. Boy, that was great when I translated that. I want to unfold. I don't want to stay folded anywhere, because where I am folded, there I am alive. And I want my grasp of things true before you. I want to describe myself like a painting that I looked at closely for a long time, like a saying that I finally understood. Like the picture I use every day. Like the face of my mother. Like a ship that took me safely through the wildest storm of all. Can I do the end of that again? You see, if we had a culture in the United States, you would hear these on the television. You know, television is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. It's hard to believe. But they know it now. They've got Americans who are willing to sit in front of a television and set for 4 hours every day. Doesn't matter what you give them. Because there's something in the brain that's addicted now to those quickly flashing things like that. And the reason why it turns so quickly is that you cannot form a thought while that's happening. And that's the main thing the corporations want. Please don't form any thoughts. Like corporate people ought to be shocked. That's a thought. So we had, I remember when in my little town in Minnesota, we had a young boy there. He wasn't too bright, but television had just come in. It was still black and white. And it was in his house, and there was someone on television doing something mean to a young girl. And he went out and got his rifle and shot the television set. And I thought there was something in that guy, but good. I want to unfold. I don't want to stay folded anywhere. Because wherever I am folded, there I am alive. And I want my grasp of things true before you. I want to describe myself like a painting that I looked at closely for a long time. That's nice. Like a saying that I finally understood. Like a picture I use every day. Like the face of my mother. Ooh, that's a swift move. Whew. Like the face of my mother. Like a ship that took me safely through the wildest storm of all. I don't know what the ship must have been your own body, isn't it right? Took you through the wildest storm of all, probably. To praise is a whole thing. This is the last welcome poem I'll do. But it's probably his most famous one. You know, most of our poets are whiners, you know? And you wouldn't believe the mother I had. I mean, you just believe that. And I had a job, and geez. So you have to, you know, try to notice how much you're whining and how much you're praising. And if you don't like anybody, then get a painting and praise that. You'll get the people eventually. To praise is a whole thing. A man or woman who can praise comes toward us like ore out of the silences of a rock. That heart that dies presses out for others a wine that lasts forever. That's good, the heart breath. Wonderful. Isn't it amazing how we can do these images? They're called images, and they contain thinking. Ah, God knows. His heart that dies presses out for others a wine that is fresh forever. When the God's energy takes hold of him, his voice never collapses into dust. Everything turns to vineyards. Everything turns to grapes, made ready for harvest by his powerful south. The mold in the catacomb of the king does not suggest that his praising is lies. The mold in the catacomb of the king does not suggest that his praising is lies, nor the fact that the gods cast shadows. He is one of the servants who does not go away, who still holds through the doors of the tomb trays of shining fruit. Now that's a brilliant last stanza. We know where it came from. Because one of the guys that was investigating Egyptian monuments just at that time found a, opened a tomb. And there at the door of the tomb, after he got inside, there was the bones of a servant, bones lying there on the mantelpiece with a little plate with some old fruit in it. Bones still lying there. With a little fruit in the plate. And Rilke said, whoa, that is something. He is one of the servants who does not go away, who still holds through the doors of the tomb trays of shining fruit. So, that is Rainer Maria Rilke. You can clap for him, too.
So that's Bly reading Rilke.
Brings it all back.
It does. That was a nice evening. Yeah, and you're listening to Wordplay, WPVM's program by, about, for, etc., poets and poetry. Anyway, I am Jeff Davis. I'm in the studio today with Laura Hope Gill, and we're listening to Robert Bly reading at UNCA on the 25th of April this year, 2007. Well, let's listen to some more Bly. This is Bly reading. He read a lot of his own work, some at the beginning, and at the end he came back and read the Gazelles that he's been working on, and he'll explain exactly what that's about. But yeah.
He will call them Gazelles.
He does. He calls them Gazelles and Gazelles.
But we really need to be clear in the name of Aga Shahid Ali that it is Ghazal. There's nothing Ghazali about it.
Right, I think I'll do three poems of mine, and then we'll quit. This is a poem about parents, and it's kind of a naughty poem, but I put it in. It's a good idea to figure out what to do with parents. One man I knew, after caring for them for years, led them across a busy street. Two lines of traffic. He started a lost colony for his parents. He bought them ski gloves and Panama hats. He sent his parents into battle. He dressed them in Austrian uniforms and gave them maps of Russia. No one ever saw them again. Another man built a furnace and put his parents into it. He got some tincture and tried to transubstantiate his parents. It took a long time. It used a lot of heat, but there wasn't much change. A neighbor stored them in an empty cistern. The ladder is still sticking out. He took them to Africa and got his parents to take a walk in the jungle, and they died all right. But by the end, they knew for sure that they'd had children. A dream last night. Last night in my dream, I took some steps underground. It seemed to be a holy place. Perhaps amongst 1,000 years ago, thought there. I'd almost forgotten them. How can we forget? Well, it's easy. The guard at the door stopped me. You know the kind, those who keep people out. I began singing, hum-da-la, hum-da-la. I couldn't remember what those words meant, but the man at the door grew lightheaded and let me slip in. There you are. All right, I'll do a couple of these. These will be American Gazelles now. So you have 36 syllables, then it changes. And the same word ends each stanza. And you usually mention your own name at the end. That's why they have words like Rumi and Hafez. We don't have those. Rumi means someone who lives in town of Rum. Hafez means, you know. But I have to use Robert, and it's kind of embarrassing. The bridegroom wanted to reach the Norwegian church, but the roads were made impassable by huge snows. We are each the bridegroom longing for existence. Marriage brings the moth close to the candle flame. That's a favorite image in Muslim things. The moth coming in. Marriage brings the moth close to the candle flame. With their frail wings, men and women are constantly flying into the fire of existence. Marriage brings the moth close to the candle flame. With their frail wings, men and women are constantly flying into the fire of existence. Some say, I got to change the subject. Some say that each drop of groundwater in Kansas knows about the ocean. How can this be? Every drop of water longs, like us, for existence. Abu Sayyid was an old early Muslim who fasted in the desert for 20 years and eating nothing but rocks and stuff. And the only thing, there was a little dragon out there. And so after 20 years, he went to town again. He came back out to see the dragon. And this is a conversation. Abu Sayyid fasted in the desert for 20 years. Later, when he came back, his dragon friend said, "Your suffering gave me a hint of existence. Boy, that's amazing. The dragons don't understand about that. This is my wife playing Bach on the piano. When the pianist's fingers strike on the 10th prelude, it's clear that Bach's soul has been leaping about like a hare in the field of existence. When the pianist's fingers strike all the notes in the 10th prelude, it's clear that Bach's soul has been leaping about like a hare in the field of existence. Robert, you're close to joy, but not quite there. You are a hunchback standing in an Italian square, looking in at the festival of existence. So, did you have your hand up? No? What are you thinking? Again, the whole thing? The bridegroom wanted to reach the Norwegian church, but the roads were made impassable by huge snows. We are each the bridegroom, longing for existence. Marriage brings the moth close to the candle flame. With their frail wings, men and women are constantly flying into the fire of existence. Some say that each drop of groundwater in Kansas knows about the ocean. How can this be? Every drop of water longs, like us, for existence. Abu Sa'id fasted in the desert for 20 years. Later, when he came back, his dragon friend wept. Your suffering gave me a hint of existence. When the pianist's fingers strike all the notes in the 10th prelude, it's clear Bach's soul has been leaping about like a hare in the field of existence. That's why he's so great. Robert, you're close to joy, but not quite there. You are a hunchback standing in an Italian square looking in at the Festival of Existence. All right. Well, are you okay with two more instead of one more? Because I got non-existence. I realized I have non-existence here, and I should do that too. When I hear that we all belong to non-existence, I drop my eyes. But then I raise them out of love for the little creatures of non-existence. Some say that perch become like each other to keep the shark from zeroing in. But staying alive doesn't mean they are free from non-existence. The cries of the infant barn swallows, this is a farm boy's line, the cries of the infant barn swallows rising from the mud nests fastened ingeniously to the rafters taught me to love the skinny birds of non-existence. Taoists with their thin beards fishing all day with a straight hook. That's what the Taoist teachers would do. They'd fish all day with a straight hook. Taoists with their thin beards, fishing all day with a straight hook, tell us they have learned not to expect a whole lot from non-existence. Blackberries have so many faces that their jam is a kind of thickening of nothing. Each of us loves to eat the thick syrup of non-existence. I wrote that first, and then it cost me hours and hours to get the other five stanzas. Blackberries have so many faces that their jam is a kind of thickening of nothing. Each of us loves to eat the thick syrup of non-existence. When each stanza closes with the same word, I'm glad, a friend says. If you're proud of that, you must be one of the secretaries of non-existence. All right. And this is the last poem, and I want to thank you for being such a lovely audience. And I haven't read some of these translations before, and it's a great joy to read them and see your faces light up and all of that. I get more fun out of it than you do. So thank you so much for mean you and you going through all of this to invite me here and stay here. Stealing sugar from the castle, and the repeating word is the word joy. And I did it correctly this time, in which the first, you see, they have two 18-syllable lines, and so the two lines would both end with joy. But we can't keep a line going more than 13 or 14 syllables without it breaking down. It's something strange in English. So I use three 12-syllable lines. That makes 36. And they won't, you know, you can't get anything said in 24, is their idea. They ought to know, you know. So. We are poor students who stay after school to study joy. We are like those birds in the India mountains. I'm a widow whose child is her only joy. The only thing I hold in my ant-like head, I'm also talking about the joy of translating, which I consider a form of stealing sugar. The only thing I hold in my ant-like head is the builder's plan of the castle of sugar. Just to steal one grain of sugar is a joy. This is from the Beowulf time. What is human life like? Fly through the snow in a storm, and suddenly you see a window, you go into it, and there's a bunch of crazy guys down there singing and drinking, and you fly out the other side into the storm for another 100 years. That's their image for human life. Brilliant, isn't it? Brilliant. Like a bird, we fly out of darkness into the hall, which is lit with singing, and then fly out again. Being shot out of the warm hall is also a joy. Like a bird, we fly out of darkness into the hall, which is lit with singing, and then fly out again. Being shut out of the warm hall is also a joy. I'm a laggard, a loafer, and an idiot. And one of my sons says, Dad, you're not a loafer. That's right. I'm a laggard, a loafer, and an idiot. But I love to read about those who caught one glimpse of the face and died 20 years later in joy. I'm a laggard, a loafer, and an idiot. But I love to read about those who caught one glimpse of the face and died 20 years later in joy. I don't mind your saying I will die soon. People say, don't you think you're going to die pretty soon, Robert? What do you think? I say, it's none of your business anyway. I don't mind your saying I will die soon. Even in the sound of the word soon, I hear the word you, which begins every sentence of joy. I don't mind your saying I will die soon. Even in the sound of the word soon, I hear the word you, which begins every sentence of joy. You're a thief, the judge said. Let's see your hands. I showed my calloused hands in court. My sentence was 1,000 years of joy.
You've been listening to Robert Bly reading at UNCA on the 25th of April, 2007. Well, that's our show for this Sunday.
Have a wonderful afternoon, everybody.